Welcome to the Make or Miss podcast. This is Seth Partner here with part one of a two-parter today, joined by Doug Eberhardt of SB Nation and other places, former and hopefully future NBA assistant, summer league coach, scout, and all-around summer league expert to talk about what to look for in summer league, both at the top and bottom of some rosters. Also, apologies for the audio quality on both this one and part two coming up later today, which will be with talking practice. Working on getting that sorted out, but thanks for listening and take it away.
Here with Doug Eberhardt, NBA coach and all around man about town. Doug, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure, Seth. Yes, I'm quite the bon vivant. I'm glad you pointed that out as I sit quietly in my darkened apartment in the middle of the day.
Well, it's, you know, in the middle of the summer, a dark apartment can actually be the most pleasant place there is. As we're both northerners, sometimes I imagine the heat is not the most pleasant experience for either of us.
No, I'm in Vancouver, and actually it's been unbelievably warm. And then you combine that with we've had a number of forest fires across the province of BC, which has given Vancouver kind of almost a post-apocalyptic glow. It's really strange, actually. I don't have the continual 23 hours a day sunshine that you experience up in Alaska, but it's still been quite a strange kind of last week here in the Vancouver area.
It's just been ridiculously hot up here, by which I mean it's gotten to 80 some days, which, if you're used to Alaskan weather, 80 feels like about 110 other places. Just relatively speaking. So it's been
that actually is pretty good, as it will prepare you for the blast furnace you're about to experience down in Las Vegas.
Exactly, so. the pizza oven of the Cox Pavilion parking lot. And that's actually why. Thank you. That's a great segue.
Oh, well, I was going to say I'm throwing the segue out there for you.
It's a softball. I wanted to have you on just as you've been someone who's covered and coached and scouted summer league. I wanted to have you on to kind of talk about kind of what's actually going on at the various summer leagues, just in terms of, you know, it's the first look at some draft picks, and it's easy to get excited about people or, you know, disappointed with showings, and just to talk about what's actually going on, what kind of quote unquote matters as far as what we're likely to see in the NBA season and what doesn't. And,
I've had the opportunity to coach with the New York Knicks back in the Mike D'Antoni era at Summer League. That was my first coaching experience at Summer League. And then later on, I was lucky enough to be an assistant coach with the Memphis Grizzlies, again, at Summer League in Las Vegas. So I have that experience. I'm a quasi-media guy, as I say. You know, I've done a variety of things. Long-time radio analyst and on the NBA, and then the past little while, I wrote a column for SB Nation NBA. So I've experienced Summer League on multiple occasions from the media standpoint, and then between the coaching and the media work, I have got to do a little bit of scouting, not so much on the personnel side, but more what an advanced scout would do in terms of charting plays, doing X's and O's type of scouting. So I've had a little bit of that experience at Summer League as well.
Sure. So that's the first thing I kind of wanted to get into is from a team standpoint, what are teams hoping to get out of Summer League?
It's interesting because, obviously 30 NBA teams and then the D-League select team as well, potentially going to summer leagues. I'll focus mainly on Las Vegas just because it's the largest summer league open to the public and the one where I think fans would have the most chance to see live and or would probably tune into the games online or on NBA TV. And so what teams are trying to accomplish varies so much, it's unbelievable. You have some teams, as you mentioned, that have new high-profile draft picks coming in, and Summer League basically for them is going to be an introduction to the NBA game. It's going to be a mini training camp, before you even get to Las Vegas. That's normally a four-day affair. Some teams will do it right in Vegas. We'll gather everyone there, do it in Vegas, and stay there. You end up being there for a couple of weeks. Or other teams will hold mini camps at their practice facilities in their home cities. And so that's basically Joe College and or international player. Here's your introduction to how we conduct ourselves at the NBA level in terms of practices, in terms of what we're trying to accomplish, in terms of what we want out of you and what's expected of you from this level. So it's obviously that first introduction for some teams, use it on for their draft picks. Other teams, if you have existing roster players in your first two, sometimes in your first 3 years, teams will use that as a combination of more reinforcement of what it means to be a professional in the NBA, but also they use it as a gateway from summer league into September when informal workouts and scrimmages take place right into their training camp. So an example of that to me this summer would be the Los Angeles Lakers, where you have Clarkson coming back after a successful rookie year on a very poor team. You're going to have Julius Randle back off of his injury. And then you have, obviously, Russell coming in. So you've got some roster pieces where you're going to use it as an introduction, but it's also now building towards September and October when training camp begins. Because a team like the Lakers, for instance, or right now, or the Orlando Magic down in the Orlando Summer League, those are actual rotation guys that are going to get minutes, and you're using that to basically develop the young part of your roster as you head into the regular season when things matter. So that might be an introduction of some of the actions you're going to run or more actions. It's going to be a combination of development where you're stressing things perhaps that you've worked on with your existing players throughout the past season and introducing the rookies into that same sort of offensive or defensive philosophy. So you have teams that use it as that. And then there's other teams where, unfortunately, they don't have young parts, or rotation players anyway. You have guys that have been in the league 1 or 2 years that are end-of-the-bench guys, but they have potential where you're going to focus on getting those guys reps in summer leagues, and then the rest of the roster is primarily going to be filled out by free agents, guys that are looking to enhance their position to play in Europe, enhance their paycheck, perhaps if they have a shot at a high-money country like China. They're even there as practice players, so to speak, to get even more reps for your regulars. And that was the case when I had a chance to coach with the Knicks. They had drafted Jordan Hill, number whatever, 8, I guess, just ahead of Steph Curry. I always say Steph Curry would have advanced to the championship stage much quicker if I'd had that chance to coach him in summer league, but that's kind of beside the point. So it was a team where you had a couple of guys coming in, Tony Douglas being the other one, where the Knicks had bought a late first round pick. I believe it was from the Lakers back then. So you have those two guys coming in, but you have no young players at that point with the Knicks that are going to be developed. And Noel Gallinari at that time was coming off of an injury. So basically it was Tony Douglas, Jordan Hill, who you wanted to look at, introduce to the NBA game, what it means to be a professional, get them reps. And then the whole rest of the roster, as I've described many times to people, we had every first-round bust from throughout the NBA from the previous 4 years. It was unbelievable how many lottery and first round guys we had from other teams that simply hadn't worked out and were there as free agents to hopefully either burnish their reputations to return to the NBA, or more to the fact that they were there to look good and try and get a lucrative European job. And there were some guys that could have played on that team in the NBA, I think, for many years. The prime one I always talk about is Mr. Skeetitz Vile, who obviously drafted, I think, 4 by Denver in the Kiki Vandeweghe days. And bounced around. A guy who I thought was the consummate professional, had an NBA skill set, just had the unfortunate opportunity of being drafted too high and at a time when international guys kind of were in vogue. But he's a player, to me, who in the right situation would have been a 10-year NBA player, but ends up, flaming out in Denver. He played summer league for us and then went back and collected a nice big fat paycheck over in Europe. So you have those kind of different team situations. So those are kind of what the teams are looking at. And then, you know, you ask something fans can look for. And another thing I think always look at with a summer league team as a fan, something as simple as who's coaching the summer league team. Because that tells you obviously something that they're trying to accomplish as well. If it's a lead assistant, a front row assistant handling summer league duties, that normally means that they're setting up for the season, that they have roster guys, and that they're trying to do things as much as possible just like they would during the regular year. As opposed to if you have a player development coach or a second row seating arrangement coach coaching your summer league, that's someone that they see potential in, that they're trying to get coaching reps, as it were, game reps, someone that can move up the ladder quickly or contend for a full-time job in the near future. So teams are looking at developing their coaches as well as developing their players. So that's something that I always encourage fans to have a look at. And an example this summer would look no further than the San Antonio Spurs, always a progressive unit, but in Las Vegas, Becky Hammon will be coaching their team. Now, they know what they want to do. They have some young players that they're trying to get reps, but their main coaches, obviously Pop and even people like Chip England, their longtime shooting coach, those type of folks are going to take Summer League as an opportunity to watch, to kibitz up in the stands, to say hello and network while they allow Becky Hammond to run the bench. And then San Antonio also always brings in like a busload of young or foreign coaches that they allow to sit in for summer league. And the reason I bring this up is a player, a fellow alumnus from the University of BC that I know and played with named J.D. Jackson, a former Canadian national team player who's now the head coach of Lyon in France, which is a French A team and a EuroLeague team. He's going to be part of that kind of the foreign coach contingent that's taking part with the Spurs. So the Spurs see Summer League as a more of a coaching and personnel development situation as opposed to we need to get guys introduced to what's going on. That'll happen organically, and while they kind of focus on developing the coaching staff and the player personnel staff of Summer League.
Sure. Can I actually go on a tangent there? Is this kind of brain swap almost that we're talking about? Is this you think that has anything to do with kind of the high level of success the Spurs have had drafting kind of European and foreign players? Is this kind of network of coaches that they've worked with and can call up and say, hey, tell me what you think about, you know, Leo John Charles, and then and I'm sure I butchered his name, and then we've heard good things from people we trust and have worked with, so let's pick him and figure he'll develop. Is that?
I'm sure there are international scouts and R.C. Buford and those people have discussions with foreign coaches all the time on exactly that type of matter. It's not so much a quid pro quo in terms of, you know, you've given us information, come in and be part of our summer league staff. I think the Spurs just whole outlook in terms of how the game is played and where they can learn new information plays a huge part in having foreign coaches and young coaches come in and be part of summer league. So it might be a little of it, what you were talking about, but I see it more that the Spurs imagine it as a learning experience both for them and for the foreign coaches that take part in it.
And sure, and it just never hurts to have more people who will take your phone call and kind of know how you do things, I imagine. Especially
no, and it. Also it's a wonderful introduction to the NBA game for a vast number of coaches, whether it's college coaches who maybe between jobs who sit in on a summer league bench, or folks like myself, you know, trying to get a little more of a foot in the door in terms of NBA coaching. It's so relationship-based, but summer league, it's not only an incubator for your playing talent, but also for your coaching and front office talent as well.
Sure. Now, getting back to the player talent part, I think you sort of touched on this, and something I've always kind of wondered about is, you know, you're talking about guys who are maybe low-end rotational type players, you know, a guy who, if it goes well, is going to be a productive kind of seventh man for a team. In summer league, are teams, and I'm sure this varies by team, are they, all right, these are the shots you're going to get in our offense, so let's get you those, or are they almost working on expanding stuff? I'm thinking like a guy like last year, I remember watching the Orlando Summer League and Detroit, their team was having Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you know, be the ball handler in a ton of pick and rolls. And then you get into their actual NBA play and then he basically does that never. And so I'm wondering, is that just since he is, you know, as a lottery pick and rotational guy on their team, he's the best player on their summer league team. Does that sort of naturally happen, or is that an intentional thing to try to get him to expand his skill set?
I would imagine it was an intentional thing. Most summer league rosters, you know, if you have guys from your regular season roster that are playing, you're trying to put them in a situation where they probably haven't experienced during the year. You know, like you said, running pick and roller. Milwaukee is a prime example last summer in Las Vegas, where they experimented with using Giannis in a point forward type of situation. So they're looking at expanding guys' games in terms of what they can do. And it's also a situation of, here's who the personnel we have on our summer league team. We have to be able to run something relatively well. Well, that makes sense that you use your best players, your most skilled players, that maybe do something that they don't normally do, but you have no one else to do it. And because you're going to devote the majority of your minutes to the guys you've just drafted or the guys on your roster, basically anyone you're paying a pretty penny to, those are the guys that are going to get minutes. It's not often. Other guys that might get minutes are free agents that you've signed to a partially guaranteed deal where they're coming to training camp, and whether they make the team or not, they're going to be getting, you know, $60,000 to $80,000 type of thing. So you're giving the minutes to those type of folks and then filling in with others. And it just makes sense to try and expand their game, to have them do something that in the future may help you as a team. But it's also the reality of summer league that you do have the actual games, and you, as much as you're looking to develop, guys still want to win. So they're going to put their skill guys in a position where you know, they're living and dying with those guys doing things that may be uncomfortable to them or may be seen as expanding their game. That's just kind of the reality of the situation.
That makes sense. You talked about kind of the other guys who are just filling in. What's the realistic, if you're a guy who you don't have a partial guarantee, you're just a free agent. I'm going to guess in most cases, like you're either really auditioning for a nice European or Chinese contract, or maybe hoping for a camp invite. How realistic is it for some of these kind of the undrafted rookie free agents or the guys who have maybe been in the D League for a year?
Actually, one of the things you said there, like the rookie free agents, some of them truly are auditioning for training camp invites and perhaps a roster spot. You know, they don't have any body of work behind them other than their college game. And if they're undrafted, the most important thing almost NBA-wise in a situation like that is right place and right time. You look way back to a guy like Jeremy Lin that came in and played unbelievable for Dallas's summer league team as an undrafted player, and then was able to basically take his pick of spots where they wanted to invite him to camp, and he ends up being on the Golden State Warriors roster, where it didn't work out, but that was a result of how he played at summer league, where he was a guy who came in. They didn't have necessarily any expectations on him, the Dallas summer league team, but he played well enough to get major minutes and highlight the best parts of his game. Whereas you have other guys that often you'll end up with guys on a summer league roster because the general manager or the player personnel guy or assistant general manager are doing a favor for an agent. They've had dealings with a particular agent, and so they'll bring in one of his clients as part of your summer league roster. And, you know, many guys are going to get DNPs. Do not play coach's decision, even in summer league. So with players like that, they're there to work hard in practice, to show good habits, that they're professional, that they're good teammates. And so when someone in Montenegro calls that head summer league coach or the personnel guy, you're going to be able to say good things about that player, and he's going to be able to secure a nice European contract. But even as a fan, one of the things I like to do, and the saying in the NBA is there's someone always watching. And that's what you tell players when you're doing individual workouts, when you're practicing, when you're having a mini camp, when you're playing a summer league game, someone is always watching them. And even guys sitting on the bench, you have people paying attention, you know, in limited playing time. How do they react? What's their body language? Are they not playing? Are they engaged with their teammates, or are they sulking? All those things come under the microscope in summer league. And as a fan, you might want to sit one game, especially if you're at the Cox Pavilion or the Thomas and Mack, you know, sit and check out a guy that you maybe think should be playing that's not playing. And he's not being rested because he's one of their top players from game to game. But, you know, he's maybe a free agent that just came from playing in Germany, and he's not getting time. But watch how he interacts with his teammates, how his body language is. Is he engaged in the game? Because NBA people are definitely watching those sort of things. So guys like that aren't realistically looking at busting through, you know, being a summer league sensation and getting a training camp invite and maybe making a roster. Guys like that are auditioning for foreign contracts or a D league if they want to stick around, and they're trying to make an impression based on being a good teammate, working hard in practice, and more importantly, getting a nice recommendation from the GM or from the summer league coach when they build relationships with foreign teams or agents.
And having talked to some players at D League in at summer league in the past, you get that impression that the ones that are successful kind of professionals, not guys who are making like NBA money, but guys who are making a good solid living in Europe, are the ones who kind of have understood that and are the ones who are as I think as you kind of alluded to, the ones who are professional on the bench and in their body language and stuff like that. And that's kind of the upside for kind of those fringier guys. I mean, from the NBA standpoint, fringier guys.
Yeah, definitely. And then you do get the odd player that, you know, a team will reward someone with playing time in a game, and they've stayed ready, and they actually do break out, and it works out Cinderella-wise, you know, very nicely for them, that they can become a fringe NBA player or, you know, eventually carve out a very nice long career after playing in multiple different countries and having to put up with a lot of different things, but they've stayed ready and they get a chance. And it's interesting how playing time is divvied up in summer league. You know, you have your own players, like I said, guys that are already on your roster or rookies that are going to get the majority of time. And as hard as some people work in the mini training camp or in practices or as professional as they are, sometimes it just doesn't matter. They're not going to get time. But often a coach will recognize that and reward it, and those folks do have a chance to carve out an NBA niche, as it were, based on some of those good qualities we just talked about.
Sure. Now, I have, from having been to the Vegas Summer League multiple times, there I have noticed kind of a fair number of kind of European scouts around. Is it really a prime scouting spot, or is it more the networking for the European based coaches and franchises? Basically, are you actually getting a look in terms of your on court stuff as well as just kind of the personal recommendation side from the NBA front office that you happen to be working for?
Well, it's a little of both, and for those fans that are going to be in Vegas live. When you walk into the gym in the Cox Pavilion, the majority of the foreign agents are right in the door as you walk in. You know, take a little look over to your left or as you walk in, and that's kind of where the foreign agents are. And it's interesting because you have foreign teams and coaches there looking for players to fill out their rosters, but you also have a great number of agents. The reason being, in Europe, the system works a little differently in that the team pays the agent. It's not a player, Joe Smith is my agent, and he gets me a gig in Spain with, a top Serie A team. It's not the player that's paying his percentage to the agent. It's the team that pays the agent. So that's why it's an interesting set up in terms of you have a lot of agents there looking for guys that, that might fit this particular team in Israel or this particular team in Germany, and that act as conduits between the teams and the players, more than just having here are my clients and then work the teams. You have guys looking to pick guys up as well. And not so much rating clients, but, listen, I can potentially arrange this for you. So it's an interesting dynamic as far as the European agents and teams and how they deal with the players and the NBA teams.
So that's almost more of a broker model rather than a
correct.
Representative. Okay, no, that's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. That does happen. They also obviously represent players and have portfolios of players as well. But just because of the setup of how they're going to be compensated, they watch very closely as to, maybe this guy could fulfill a need for a team I have in Bosnia or a team I have in France or Italy or wherever, Belgium.
Incidentally, that seems like that's kind of a little wrinkle that maybe makes a little known thing is like the money people make in Europe is often after-tax money, right? And this kind of another thing where like the agent fee comes off the top in an NBA contract, but if the team is picking it up, that's maybe that makes the European contract maybe slightly more lucrative relatively than it appears. And
it can, but then you have to be for the European guys, you have to be in with a solid guy because there's more than one paycheck or plane ticket that's never shown up in different countries based on how legitimate the franchise is, and that's always a problem, regardless of whether you're with one of the top agencies or some small European agency. It's always something guys need to be on top of.
Sure. So, okay, moving on from kind of the guys sort of down the roster, we're in kind of, since this comes right on the heels of the draft and a little bit free agency as well, it's kind of a little bit of a silly season in terms of, Miles Turner had, a double-double with, six blocks or something the other day, and it's like, well, they got a steal. That's not always or really ever the case just because the level of competition is so different. What are some things to to look for in terms of how a guy might or might not make an impact, both this coming year and going forward in the NBA? What kind of putting your scouting hat on, what are some of the things that you're looking for as far as
translating? Well, I guess one of the things, obviously, your traditional stats, guys are going to put up numbers at Summer League, and just because teams are going to run plays for them, guys are going to get more minutes because they're part of the roster or a high draft pick, et cetera. So, you can't kind of look at traditional stats or stat lines. Like you said about Miles Turner, he put up a good line. I think the best line he put up was for his barber. But other than that, the one thing I look for at Summer League, everyone, and I mean everyone out on the floor, is going 1,000 miles an hour. You know, it's just, or in my case, they're going 1,600 kilometers an hour. people are moving too quick. You know, there's not a lot of patience, et cetera. So what I like to look for in individual players, okay, who moves at a very measured pace? Not that they're slacking off or going slow, but who can make decisions at speed? Who uses change of speed and change of direction effectively, whether it's with the ball, whether it's off of cuts, whether it's diving to the hoop off the pick and roll? So, you know, look for guys that don't look like they're going 1,000 miles an hour, and compare how guys are moving with the speed of the game that increases, obviously, at each level. So that's one of the things. And how I do that a lot of times, and a little thing to watch for, is what is a guy's footwork like, you know, on offense? What is his footwork like handling the ball? What is his footwork like on the catch? Is he prepared in a position to shoot off the catch? Is he in a position to use proper footwork off that catch if he gets run off the line to put the ball on the floor, either to get to the rim or to pull up or to use a sidestep to shoot the three? You know, is he doing his work footwork-wise before the ball gets there? What's his footwork like offensively coming off of a screen if he's an off guard or a small forward? And that extends to not only his footwork, but is he coming off the screener's shoulder? Is he reading whether the guy has locked on his hip and trailing him, in which point you want him to curl? Or is the guy defending him cheating, trying to go over the top of the screen, where he would flatten out, hopefully, flare for a jump shot? What's a guy's footwork like on post-catches? And obviously, the NBA game is moving away from the traditional back-to-the-basket game, but watching a big man make a post catch, even if he has no discernible post game, what is his footwork like? Is he able to catch with 2 feet and therefore use either foot as a pivot foot? Can he then go to either shoulder? Does he have the footwork correct for that? If he's trying to shoot a little step back jumper, what's his footwork like? So that's offensively kind of what I look for, the little thing of footwork. Sure. Defensively, the same thing. One of the things you can really watch and figure guys out with, what's their defensive footwork like? What's their on-ball containment like? How are they square? Are they sitting down? Is their back straight or are they bending from their waist? And that all starts with the feet. Teams that down the pick and roll on the sideline or blue or ice or whatever you want to call it, Are they setting their footwork up properly at an angle where they're forcing towards the sideline baseline but not giving away and opening the door completely? Are they locking onto the ball handler's top hip to keep him from coming back to the middle of the floor? Again, that's all footwork. On ball pick and rolls, when they try to go over the top of the screen, is their footwork to step up towards the ball handler and close the distance? Or is it basically just to slide sideways right into the screen? If they go under, are they dropping their back foot, sliding under, and beating the ball handler to the spot? Or are they spinning off the under, like you see Steph Curry do for Golden State, for instance, all set up by their footwork? And then even something most summer league guys, especially rookies, struggle mightily. Watch them on the weak side on defense. Where do they position themselves as the help man? or the help the helper guy? Have they figured out how to 2-9 or to get into the key without a defensive 3 seconds being called? What's their footwork when they get in there? Say they drop down to the low block and they have to either close out straight line up the foul line or they have to X out to the wing on a rotation. What is their footwork like? So that's one thing that I really focus on with guys. And I think as fans, whether you're watching on television or live in the building, something as small as that, and then take everything I just said about footwork and you can apply it to the greater offensive and defensive game in terms of their positioning, their IQ, how they're doing out on the floor when they don't have the ball or they're not involved in the prime part of the action, both offensively or defensively. Are they ready in a position either to shoot or to help out and then to recover and kick or whatever? You know, offense and defense, those things are all unbelievably important, and you can get a good feel for a guy by watching those, that type of footwork out on the floor.
Sure. Now, isn't one of the easiest ways to, at least in my experience, kind of one of the easiest ways I've been fooled in the past is kind of you're talking about the pace of the game, and I think that if you really watch, you can absolutely see how, you know, everyone, you know, they're trying to impress and show they're working hard and everything and going a million miles an hour. But so any sort of a professional guard, a guy who has some experience, even just a year of play, can almost look more impressive than they actually are just by the fact that they, you know, are able to play in a little bit of under a little bit of control. And it seems like that's almost from year one to year two, that's just a huge difference just in terms of learning that. And how do you separate, you know, the, all right, he's going at the right speed, is his actual speed fast enough to matter in kind of an NBA setting? Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
Oh, definitely. And that's one of the things that you need to factor in. Obviously, someone with experience, hopefully, is able to do some of the things I talked about. And, you know, for myself, that's primarily with guys new to the NBA game, those type of things. But I think you just have to, in your mind, have to have it on a scale, you know, weighing those type of things to watch with the experience factor and the guy's age as well. Because in summer league, you have guys that are trying to get back into the NBA that are older, experienced NBA veterans, where, excuse me, those type of things necessary, they're going to probably be doing right. And with a guy like, whether it was Delonte West, whether it was Adam Morrison when he was kind of making his comeback, you look for on those guys, you know, what NBA skill do they possess or did they possess? Are they still able to be elite at that one skill or make a difference at that one skill? You know, if it's a shooter, do they still have NBA range? Are they moving in a situation where they can catch and shoot? Can they shoot off the dribble? You know, you start looking at kind of tweener guys that, you know, maybe they look really smooth. Well, now take it to the next step. Can they cover quicker guys? Can they cover bigger guys with bigs, whether they're experienced or new? Can they defend the rim? And I know, you know, something obviously you've written a lot about. Can they defend the rim? Can they jump out on pick and roll and recover? Or even better, can they jump out on pick and roll and switch and cover smaller guys? So then you start looking at things in summer league like you would at a regular NBA game, again, based on guys' experiences or expectations.
Sure. So, I mean, and you know, I'm just thinking back to last year, I'm noticing a guy like Matthew Dellavedova. It was, you know, he was doing a lot of subtle good things to the point guard in terms of, you know, making the defender commit to him for an extra half second so that, you know, the next pass was more open and stuff like that. And it's like, that's all very, that's very heady stuff. That's good. It's just a matter of is that enough? And, you know, in his case, I guess that the kind of the defensive tenacity and roster need was enough to get him kind of on the team and go from there. But even though the fact that kind of just being solid in a summer league setting just isn't enough. They need to be a standout in some ways.
Exactly. And it becomes pretty apparent after a couple of days at summer league which guys are able to do those sort of things, I think, anyway. You get the odd outlier, but after a couple of days when guys get comfortable, they're a little less nervous, regardless of their experience, you really start to see guys that if they have a marketable NBA skill, that kind of becomes apparent. And Dellavedova, for, all the good things that happen for him and then for all the crushing criticism he gets in terms of, guys just don't like the grittiness, so to speak. He has NBA skills, and he exhibited those at Summer League. That's why he got the invite, and he made the team a couple of years ago, right?
It's, sure.
You also have all that film from St. Mary's to go on, et cetera. So it's a lot of fans or media get overly excited about Summer League just because it's the only thing happening, and
right.
You have folks that they overreact to everything, which a lot of folks do during the regular season as well.
Sure.
So you temper both the good and the bad in terms of how you're reacting to what you're seeing. And it's interesting. Just I don't know whether it's because of the news cycle or social media or whatever, but everything is so much more dramatic because of Summer League than it used to be. Just because you have that, this guy went off, he was killing people. I remember the first one for me a number of years back was when Marco Bellinelli was playing for Golden State.
Yes.
In Summer League, and this was Don Nelson's new offensive whiz, and he was doing all sorts of crazy things in Summer League and showing his shooting range and racking up big numbers, etc. And then of course during the regular season that he didn't even get a lot of time because he didn't have the full array of skills. So
sure,
Summer League, you have to temper kind of whatever you see at Summer League. Your rose-tinted glasses at Summer League have to come off during the actual Summer League. You can't get too excited, too high or too low.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. First, on one hand, kind of the stuff like a phrase I like to use is, well, that's not going to work. the classic example I think for me was, and I've been going to Summer League off and on for 7-8 years now too. One of the first ones that comes to mind on that's is Anthony Randolph. I believe it was Steph Curry's rookie year at Summer League. Anthony Randolph was, putting up, 35 and 15 and stuff like that. But it was the way he was doing it was like, a ball dominant stretch four, taking a lot of pull up jump shots in a situation where he's the most athletically dominant player on the court in a way that's not going to translate. And so, and all that led to, well, that's not going to work unless the way he's doing it. And I'm just, what are some of the things that people should be aware of? Like, okay, that's getting buckets here. You step up the next level of competition, it's not going to work that way for him.
Yeah, well, it's again, that comes down to who do they have on their roster and how do they have to play. And for a guy like Anthony Randolph, as you mentioned, he was just so much more athletically superior to anyone he was having to deal with in Summer League. And that's one of the dangers of reading too much into it, because as you said, you have to be able to recognize that how they're playing is not how that team will play during the regular season. And for a lot of fans and media members, I think they're not, from a X's and O's perspective, not well versed enough to know that that's not going to work, and that's not how they're going to play, etc. So that's definitely something you have to guard against with your enthusiasm for players in Summer League. Or like myself with the Memphis team I had an opportunity to work with, we had Josh Selby on our roster, who ended up being the MVP of that Summer League and was unbelievable in terms of both scoring and clutchness in situations and making some very, very difficult shots. But, you know, it was very apparent that, you know, we were playing that way because he was a roster player and he was very talented. But he wasn't going to play that way in a NBA game. You know, we tried to get him more time at point guard, things like that, but his offensive explosions weren't going to be something that happened on a team with Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Rudy Gay, and Mike Connolly. You know, and that's where you had to be able to look at it and say, that's not going to work. But for Summer League, that was the roster that was in front of us, and that was the style of play, and he was going to be the focal point. So, you know, you have to keep that always in mind, I guess. And one way of doing that is, as I mentioned, looking at roster composition in terms of how many regulars, how many rookies, how many free agents. And sometimes you just have to play that way, even though, as the Seth quotations, I'm doing the air quotes right now, that's not going to work.
Sure. So, maybe, obviously it's going to be different for each guy in each situation, but are there, you know, if a guy is getting his points in a certain way, is a certain way kind of a thing, you can almost look and say, I'm skeptical of that, versus, okay, that's his NBA niche right there. Is there, you know, the most obvious, I guess, would be like a catch and shoot guy. If he can catch and shoot, it's the same thing either way, right?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things, again, based on roster composition, you can look at that might be transferable is, you know, for shooting guards, like you said, it'll be catch and shoot situations, coming off pin down screens, running floppy action down on the baseline with someone else coming off screens, that type of thing. Those are shots those guys might get in their NBA offense. Or if you have you know, a ball dominant point guard who's coming in as a rookie, and we'll use D'Angelo Russell as our example, he's going to handle the ball all summer league. So, and that's something that he's going to do on the Lakers roster coming up. So you can legitimately watch, see how he runs pick and roll, see how he uses change of speed, change of direction, who he distributes with, if he's blitzed on the pick and roll, double teamed, how he reacts and who he picks out. Those are all skills that are going to transfer for him, even as a rookie. But other players, you know, it may be an undersized shooting guard that's forced to play point. Or what a lot of teams do, and I'll go back to what to look for from teams, you know, they'll be doing small X's and O's experiments or testing something out for the greater coaching staff. They'll use Summer League as an opportunity to do that. You know, as you mentioned with Pope, I mentioned with Giannis, playing the point, you know, those are things where they're experimenting and probably it may carry over, it may not, but it's something they're experimenting with. But something you can look for with the team is kind of how much are they playing to the character of their regular season style of play, and whether that will carry over from summer league to what they're doing. And a lot of times, you know, on the personnel side, they're experimenting, but teams like to throw in little X's and O's tweaks as well to use summer league as a time to see, maybe can we do this better or will this work? And one that immediately pops to mind for me is with Memphis, a team based in half-court offensive philosophy, you know, still under Dave Yeager and at that time under Lionel Hollins. But one of the things they really wanted to work on was not so much, they didn't want to become a running team or a transition team, but they wanted to get into their half-court sets or actions quicker. So one of the things that we focused on in Summer League was as simple as, let's get into the shot clock faster.
Sure.
So what we were trying to, I call it headman, which is, I guess, a Canadian or perhaps a soccer term. They called it hit ahead or pass ahead.
Yeah.
Well, it could be a hockey term as well. I remember when I mentioned it and people, they kept talking about hit aheads, and I was like, what the? But so that was something that for the Memphis Summer League team we wanted to focus on, was get that ball quicker into the front court, not so much that we were going to become 7 seconds or less of the summer league, but because we wanted to get into the half-court actions quicker so that it wasn't just one pick and roll and a dump into the post, that you'd have an opportunity to run a couple of things before you were up against the shot clock. And that was something that Memphis then carried into training camp that year and we're trying to emphasize and encourage. So a lot of times, you know, watch to see how the teams are playing X's and O's wise, because you can't put in a great deal offensively because you just don't have enough time. You have that kind of four-day mini camp. But you can watch for those little type of things that they put in. And then obviously the marquee players of Summer League, watch what actions teams are running for them, and then you'll be able to determine, are they experimenting? Is that something that theoretically that player is going to get during the regular season, or is it something, in your words, that's just not going to work? So just, you know, pay attention to that. As well with the team, you can also pay attention to how badly the teams want to win. When it comes down to it, everyone wants to win. It looks good on everyone's resume, even if you're winning in summer league. But some teams, you know, they want to win, but they're also going to focus on what are we trying to develop off of our roster guys, our rookies, et cetera. And, you know, so they may sacrifice playing an NBA veteran who's a free agent sitting on that bench of summer league to try and get a prime time rep for a young guy. So, you know, pay attention to that as well.
Sure. Then on the other end, I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, we almost saw the boom-bust cycle yesterday. We're recording this on Tuesday. We almost saw this yesterday with Jahlil Okafor. Like, he's kind of had an indifferent first half of his first summer league game, and then the second half he was, you know, he did some nice things in the post. But in the first half, you know, what are maybe some things where if a guy is less than impressive, some signs you say, well, don't worry about that, that'll be okay. Are there things that, you know, I remember George Hill was his rookie year, for example, for San Antonio, was in my recollection, just completely lost at summer league, and he turned out to be just fine. So are there some things that you look for guys who are, you know, obviously going to be roster guys since they have that margin for error of being, you know, a first round pick or guaranteed money? Are the things you look for
where,
all right, it's not working out, but it might be okay?
Oh, no, and that comes down, you know, they may be missing shots, but you're looking at, are they good shots? Is he forcing those shots? Is it a situation where it's just nerves or mechanics or whatever? But he's doing everything right except making it, type of thing. So, you know, with a George Hill, that would be something you're looking at. Is it a guy that's making a positional change coming into summer league, you know, where he's been a scorer off the ball in college, but now he's being forced, obviously, to handle and to learn the point guard game? With a guy like Okafor, it's he's having a rough time. Well, is that is he getting good position on his catches and just missing? Is he doing work defensively in terms of, you know, he ended up with, I think it was 10 rebounds. Are those rebounds in traffic? Are those rebounds all coming within the circle of his arm lengths? Is he fighting guys for those rebounds? You know, so you look at that sort of thing and try and figure out, you know, he's just going to be just fine. It's just nerves, or he's rusty. It's watch the things that come before, you know, whether it's a clank on a rebound, a clank on a free throw, a clank on a shot, watch everything before that. And that's where you determine, you know, he's going to be just fine.
Sure. And I imagine, especially for kind of bigger guys, there's probably some conditioning issues too, heading into, and you know, Okafor being a big body is notable for this, but it seems like it's a constant theme that guys are maybe having to work harder just to get up and down the court than they're used to, and that's
definitely, and that's part of learning to become a professional too. You know, guys in college think that they're working hard, But until they get to see how some of the veteran elite players in the NBA work, you know, whether it's their conditioning, whether it's their diet and nutrition, whether it's the work ethic of getting shots up and how they do it and that type of work, you know, that all comes into play too. Most of the guys coming out of college who've worked very hard for elite programs, but it's not the same as the type of work elite NBA players put in. And we talked about earlier, like I mentioned, how everything was happening at 1,000 miles an hour. For big guys in summer league, it's difficult as well, just because it's a very guard perimeter dominated oriented situation. You know, it often becomes like a pickup game of sorts. And for a big man, sometimes the only way you're going to get the ball is going to the offensive boards, crashing the key hard on a pick and roll, etc. But even then, it's difficult because it's such a guard-oriented situation at summer league, and guys are trying to make their mark, get noticed, etc., forcing shots, being ball dominant, things like that. You try and obviously keep guys away from that and encourage ball movement. But for bigs, they often get lost in the shuffle in transition even. You know, they end up running from rim to three-point line and then having to retreat right away because of the style of play in summer league.
And then you do that four times and then you're a little bit gassed.
You're exhausted, exactly.
Then the ball comes to you and you don't have any energy to do anything but kind of toss up a kind of a soft fadeaway because you haven't touched the ball and you want to get a shot up, but that's all you have energy for at that point.
And one of the things, though, you know, you mentioned that where guys maybe aren't in great condition. In summer league where you have 10 fouls, personal fouls, one of the things to watch as well is how do guys foul? Is it a lazy foul because they're tired? Or is it, good position where they've worked hard and done work and just happened to pick up a foul? And, that's something that you can look at as well that'll give you an indication, perhaps, of what will translate and also what type of conditioning guys are in terms of what type of fouls do they commit.
So would an example of that, to be a little more specific, say on a big man kind of hedging on a pick and roll, if he's getting fouls by reaching with his arms, that's maybe conditioning, laziness, lack of whatever, whereas if he's, getting fouls kind of hip checking a guy, those are kind of effort fouls that maybe you almost live with and say, all right, good effort, maybe get there a little faster, take a better angle next time. Is that
or for guards, are they on the screen and roll, are they getting up into the guy's body as opposed to trailing and then reaching and getting a foul? Or a big guy inside, is it someone that when they're in the charge circle, for instance, are going to go up in the air and use verticality? Or are they tired and they're just going to go for the strip and basically take the guy off at the elbow? That type of thing is a pretty good indication, too, of what type of shape guys are in, and that could translate in terms of, that was a lazy foul as opposed to that was a smart foul.
Or at least an effort foul.
Correct, exactly.
So do you feel comfortable talking about some specific guys, about like things we should, I mean, we talked a little bit about Russell and Okafor, and I think especially, a guy like Okafor might be instructive to if you were kind of at almost advanced scouting, what you would be looking for him. I know you mentioned kind of the footwork and the rebounding out of area stuff. Do you feel comfortable talking about some specific guys on
Sure. Yeah. That's no problem. My personnel knowledge overall, especially of guys coming out of college, isn't always very good, but the top of the draft guys I do know. And you mentioned Okafor. It'll be interesting with Philadelphia, actually. The head coach for Philadelphia's summer league team is a gentleman named Lloyd Pierce, who was the head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies when I got a chance to work with them. And Lloyd is very good player development coach and did a really good job as head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. So I'll actually be quite interested to see how he uses Jahlil in summer league. And, you know, we know how Philadelphia ideally wants to play with their kind of analytic-based approach. But I'll be fascinated to see how they use Okafor at summer league down in Las Vegas.
So just on, again, watching, you know, a little bit of one of his games, some things you notice are that kind of he's obviously enormous and, you know, much and kind of quicker than you expect for someone of that size. And that allows him kind of to shine simply because either guys are much smaller or much slower than him. So in that respect, like, what are some almost fine details that you would look at for his offensive game to see if that, you know, his rep is as a very kind of polished low post scorer? How would that manifest itself in a way that, you know, is more than just him being, I'm much bigger and or quicker than you?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd look for right off the bat, because he's going to be dealing with guys that are as big as him, how does he react if someone starts getting physical with him in terms of the low post? You know, NBA-wise, they let a fair amount of sumo wrestling go before guys get the ball down on the block or in the key area. So I would watch to see how he reacts to someone as big and strong, and if that person gets physical with him. You know, does he look puzzled? Does he dig in and reestablish better position? Does he use that defender's aggressiveness and or leverage against him, judo style? You know, that's kind of the first thing that jumps to my mind. The other thing with Okafor that I would watch for is, because he's always been bigger, stronger, faster than guys he's had to deal with, is it's not laziness, but I find sometimes when watching him that he always doesn't get or use an athletic position to begin a move or to begin a catch. He's often very upright simply because he's always been able to catch the ball and go right over guys, which he's now not going to be able to do. So does he do a better job of getting in an athletic position, posting up, using the heft of his legs and his ass? I sound now like Charlie Rosen and Phil Jackson. But does he use his girth down through his legs and his butt and maintain an athletic position when getting the ball and launching into offensive moves? You know, that's something to watch for. He's got, you know, the basics of a drop step. He's got the little jump hook over the shoulder. Now, let's see, does he show us any expanded post-game as far as how they're going to play? And obviously in Philadelphia, Duke ran a lot of screen and roll, but they're going to run nowhere near the amount that Okafor is going to have to run in the pros. So how does he set screens? What's his footwork like on that? Does he roll to the hoop hard? And how is his technique rolling to the hoop? Does he speed roll? Does he seal, hold for a second, and do the old reverse pivot, you know, Pete Newell style? Those type of things I would watch for with Okafor as well. And then, you know, he's exhibited, I think, soft touch for the most part, and an opportunity to improve and to stretch his game out a little bit. So how much of that does he show us in summer league? You know, and that goes back as well. Will Lloyd feature Okafor in perhaps some high post catch situations where he's going to have to run dribble handoffs, or where a team might give him that little pop and shoot at opportunity? So those are kind of things I would watch for.
I just want to quickly, you know, you talked about kind of his technique setting the screen. Is there kind of from an NBA viewing standpoint, is there a preference as to whether he's kind of doing kind of the fake screen and slip to the basket versus the kind of solid, you know, get a good body on a guy, reverse pivot, then roll? Is there a preference? Does that vary by, you know, system a little bit, or if he's doing one or the other, is it a better sign for him?
No, it varies by the system in terms of what you're trying to do. For instance, you know, most guys think of a screen as being your perpendicular. You take the guy in the chest and you stop the defender on the ball in his tracks. But that's not necessarily what you always want to do. In Mike D'Antoni's system, a lot of the screens we wanted guys setting were what are called bottom side screens, where you're setting a screen on the guy's basically ass side at a 45-degree angle. The reason being, you want to force him, the defender on the ball, to go over the screen. Because if you're forcing the guy to go over the screen, you're now forcing the player covering you to make a decision. Does he zone up? Does he hedge out? Because the defender on the ball is going to be behind the action now. So you set that bottom side screen to set up a hard roll to the hoop, a la Amari Sotomayor, for instance. So it all depends on what the team wants and what you're trying to accomplish with that screen and roll. You know, now you're setting, a down screen. You want to be perpendicular and square up on the guy and stop him in his tracks because you're trying to free someone up for a catch and shoot. Or on a ball screen again, you may come in what's called flat on a guy's back, much like Tim Duncan often does, which you can then flip the screen to one side or the other when the ball handler's ready to go to the hoop. Or you can stay flat, just making the on-ball defender think, oh, man, you know, is he going to go to my left or my right? You're basically placing a guy behind without setting an actual screen.
Sure.
And then allowing the ball handler to be going downhill as he attacks your man, the big, who's normally hovering back. You can't hedge in a situation like that. So it all depends on how the team wants the screen set. Or, as you mentioned, you can also, if you're setting a more side pick and roll, your guy starts hedging out early. Watch and see whether he being Okafor or anyone else, recognizes that his man is already above the level of the ball and whether he does slip and then look for the ball on the catch. So those all come into play screening-wise.
So moving on, what are the things you'd be looking for a much less well-known guy like a Porzingis, assuming he's on the Knicks summer league roster. How much?
I was going to say it sounds like now he may not be playing injury wise. So that's a tough one because you know he's obviously got pro experience coming over. He's been a pro from a younger age. I think the biggest thing to watch with him is his shooting because that's what he's been heralded for. A guy that size with a potentially Dirk Nowitzki-like shooting stroke, I'd be watching his shooting and pick and roll, how he pops, how he catches the ball. If the shot's not there, does he move it quickly, go set another screen? Those type of things with him. And I would watch as well, how does he run the floor? If they're running a break, is he a guy straight line running to the rim, or are they going to be having him set drag screens? And then how does he play off of those? That sort of thing. Also, with his slight build, which is something that obviously the team, athletic performance folks and the physios and the strength and conditioning coach will be working on quite hard. But how is he physically in terms of banging with some bigger, more experienced guys that are going to look at him and his high draft pick and, you know, for all intents and purposes, his foreignness, his whiteness, and going to want to try and step up athletically and bully him a little bit. So how does he respond to that as well?
And I'm going to follow up. I'm going to lead the witness a little bit. And I'm just, you know, when you're talking about the shooting, you're not necessarily talking about the ball going in or not. You're talking about kind of the footwork and the mechanics and just kind of the smoothness of catching and gathering and going up for the shot rather than, you know, you'd like it to go in, but that's not necessarily the most important thing over, you know, the a week of relatively meaningless summer league games. Is that
Definitely. Definitely. The ball goes in, all the better. But, that's not going to determine kind of how you look at him and how he might fit into the Knicks going forward. From what I saw of his draft workout that wowed so many people at Impact Basketball, his shooting stroke looked pretty darn nice. So, you're going to look for that same sort of thing. Like I said, ideally, the ball going in is pretty darn important, but in this case, you're going to be checking what leads up to that as well in terms of how he performs individually.
Whether that shooting stroke kind of holds up in kind of the hustle and bustle of game action.
Exactly. As the speed increases, as guys become more physical with him, how does he react to it? How does he counter that if guys are running him off his shot? All those sort of things in a game situation is so much different than working out against, Yee's chair in Boston. So, you want to see under fire whether all those things that look so good in his individual workout carry over into a more physical pressure pack situation.
Sure. Well, I think we're about. I've kept you about as long as I promised I would today. Anything else that you'd you're excited to look for at Summer League? Any players you're excited to see? Whether to confirm something you knew about them or just to out of curiosity.
Well, I think I'm going to go full on Homer actually in terms of this answer. There's a player right now. He's playing for the Memphis Grizzlies in Orlando. From Vancouver named Philip Scrubb, who played for the Canadian Championship Carlton team, which some folks may have read about on Grantland. They're the dominant, they've won, I believe it's 10 of the last 12 Canadian University Championships, and that Carlton team beat Memphis, they beat Wisconsin, they lost to Syracuse in overtime. You know, it's a very high quality of ball, Canadian University ball, kind of, overall, CIS basketball, I'd say, is equivalent of, mid-major at the top level. But Phil's been an unbelievable Canadian player of the year, and he's playing for Memphis now and doing a very good job, I think. And he will be playing for the Toronto Raptors at Summer League in Las Vegas. So I'll be fascinated to see, first of all, whether as a Canadian, he was added to the roster, just as a we have Canadians on our roster, or whether he's given legit time. And I think he will get legit time, and I'm fascinated to see how he plays, just because I've known the young man. Him and his brother came to my brother and I. We used to have a basketball camp, and he started out at our camp, and I think when he was in sixth grade. And so that's one player I'll be watching, both from a nationalistic and a local perspective, to see how he plays. And obviously a little bit off the radar, but the type of player that these days NBA teams are searching for. He matches up very well in all the analytics, transferring over from his university into the pros. And the type of guy where you look at him and you go, he makes the team better. So that's one guy I'm going to be watching on a selfish level.
Sure.
I'll obviously be watching all the high-profile guys. And for me, it's not so much the rookies, but I like to see guys that have been on a roster for a year in terms of how they now play compared to past summer leagues. Have they improved? What do they do differently now? And out of those guys, I think the one that's going to be fascinating is Julius Randle, because of that terrible injury in the first game. He was very good at Summer League last year, which led to a lot of Laker Nation kind of drooling towards the future. And I want to see how he's come back for injury, how he's expanded his game and how that might fit in, because he's obviously going to be a rotation guy on a still very poor Lakers team. So that's one guy coming back that I'm definitely going to be watching.
Sure, and it's unfortunate that we're not going to get a chance to see a guy like Joel Embiid, who's kind of almost forgotten that he exists almost at this point, given that he's been out for so long, but he's still on the shelf, so we'll get a chance to get a look at him in a similar kind of comeback situation.
Exactly. And but as far as Philadelphia is concerned, though, he's still an asset.
That's correct. Trying to think if there's anything else. I guess thanks a lot for the time, and look forward to seeing you out there.
No, my pleasure, and hopefully I at least dropped one or two nuggets that that people will be able to watch Summer League with maybe a little different viewpoint.
Oh, very much appreciated. Thank you so much, and I will speak to you again soon.
All right, thanks, Seth.